Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. So far, New Hampshire's been cautious about self-driving cars, but neighboring Massachusetts has had no such qualms. In fact, the state's transportation secretary has urged autonomous vehicle developers to come to Massachusetts to test your cars. We have bad roads, worse weather, even worse drivers. It's a bit of an odd invitation, but the point to companies is clear. The Bay State is ready and eager for this industry. Still, there's a lot to be worked out in this testing phase: regulations, infrastructure, and how test cars will interact with pedestrians, cyclists, and of course, all those drivers of regular cars. Today in The Exchange, as self-driving cars hit the road in other states, we ask, how's it going? And what details remain? Let's get your thoughts. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Was found on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Dave Brooks, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger, podcaster at graniteGeek.org. Dave, really nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Always a delight to be here.
And joining us from WBUR in Boston is Zeninjor Enwemeka. She's digital reporter for WBUR. She covers tech and culture as part of BUR's Bostonomics team. And Zeninjor, really nice to have you. Thanks also for your time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So, Zeninjor, why is Massachusetts so excited about autonomous vehicles?
Yeah, well, there's huge potential with autonomous vehicles. You know, a lot of people see this idyllic future where basically all of our traffic woes will be solved by this technology. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of sort of high hopes for this technology. But, you know, practically speaking, it really depends who you talk to. A lot of the excitement you'll see will be with these companies that are developing the technology that sort of underpins these vehicles, as well as automakers. And our state and local officials here really believe that these autonomous vehicles will make our roadway safer. They'll give people who can't get around as easily more mobility. But, you know, on the public side, there's still some concern. You know, some people worry about emissions and are a little bit skeptical in the public about whether these vehicles are safer. So there's a range of feelings. But right now, Massachusetts, you know, the state has really, you know, pushed to encourage companies to come in and test and develop this technology.
Yeah. And as you reported, I think, Zeninjor, a dozen, I think, maybe even more cities and towns in the Bay State have said, come on in. What's their hope that these companies will bring to their communities?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the testing that's happening right now in Massachusetts has really been in Boston. There are two companies that are testing. One is called Newtonomy, and the other is called Optimus Ride. What happened this past summer is a number of communities, 15 communities in the greater Boston area, reached an agreement with the state to open up their communities for testing. And so they signed this agreement with the state, basically in an effort to streamline the process that these companies have to go through to test in Massachusetts. And so these cities and towns are really looking at this technology as a way to improve their traffic, as a way to possibly enhance some economic development projects and plans that they're looking at. They really believe that this technology will improve their cities, will improve their communities.
Well, we'll unpack a lot of those promises, you know, better traffic flow, better safety, and so on and so forth. But to you, Dave Brooks, too, how would you gauge the enthusiasm for self-driving cars here in the Granite State?
Well, so we had this as a topic of the Science Cafe, the monthly discussions we have in Concord. It was last year sometime. And I got to say, the geeks came out of the woodwork. There's a lot of people who are really excited about the whole idea of a car driving itself while you sit in it and, you know, play your video game. Whether they're excited about the idea of what self-driving cars will do to our streets and our cities, or whether they've even actually thought about it, I'm not so sure about it. But the technology is very exciting. But as you've said, New Hampshire hasn't done much with it because there's enough dubiousness. We don't always, New Hampshire doesn't always plunge to the forefront of high tech. And this is an area where I think we're holding back. And we're perfectly happy to see Massachusetts try it out and see what they're doing.
Well, and a little bit later, we'll talk to the sponsor of a bill that would have promoted testing of these vehicles in the state. It passed the House and Senate. Governor Sununu vetoed it. So we'll talk to him about why that happened and what his future plans might be. Join us with your questions and comments today in the exchange. We're looking at self-driving cars and autonomous technology, the public policy around these vehicles. Join us with your comments, concerns, unique experiences, perhaps, with self-driving cars. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So, both of you, let's get into some of the details as to what needs to be tested. And Zanin George, to you first, what are some of the most important items that state and local officials in Massachusetts are looking at as they say, welcome to these companies?
Well, safety, of course, is a big concern. It's really the biggest issue right now for cities and towns. And so far, we are seeing quite a bit of testing happening in Massachusetts. But again, it's really been concentrated in certain areas. Now, moving forward, we have more communities here who have said, hey, we're open, we're ready for these vehicles to come in. But a lot of work a lot of the focus right now is on safety, is on, making sure that there's agreements in place with these companies. To sort of understand the parameters. So for example, in Boston, a lot of the testing has been really concentrated in a specific neighborhood. Now, one of the companies that's testing here, Newtonomy, did get approval to test across the city in all neighborhoods in the city. But one of the things that, they're focused on now is really mapping. So it's been incremental. As much as there is a lot of testing happening in Massachusetts, it's been really really incremental, and a lot of these communities are really looking at different test cases. There's a community south of Boston, South Weymouth, that has been doing piloting some tests with another company, Optimus Ride, and they've been doing that in an enclosed area in one of their sort of housing developments. They've been testing out basically hailing rides and that sort of model of autonomous vehicles. And so a lot of these communities are looking at different interesting ways to use these vehicles and are hoping, that will sort of lay a groundwork that they can continue to build on.
So, hey, can I ask you a question, Sininja?
Yeah, sure.
So are the communities excited about the idea of self-driving cars as to what they'll do? Or are they excited about the idea of getting a new technology that will come in and bring jobs and make them look cool and attract, millennials? So is it autonomy in cars in general that they want, or is it just they want to be part of the next tech thing?
Oh, I think it's a combination of, I think it's all of the above. It's a combination of both of those things. I think there's certainly, Massachusetts, we're a huge tech hub, especially in the Boston area. There is, a lot of excitement and interest in the cutting edge and what's next with technology. So that's certainly a factor. And I think in addition to that, a lot of the cities and communities that I talk to, I know in the city of Boston, the officials here talk a lot about just the promise of these self-driving cars, how they'll improve our transportation, how they'll improve traffic flow, will make things more efficient, will provide more mobility efforts. So I think a lot of communities are really looking at that as a way to supplement maybe in some ways or complement in other ways public transit and other transportation options.
I'm sure you're familiar, Dave and Zaninjor, with the emerging research now about ride-hailing companies, Uber, Lyft, and so forth, and how the promise that those would decrease congestion has not worked out. In fact, in many major cities, Chicago, San Francisco, New York, other cities, the opposite has happened, that traffic has gotten worse as people decide, well, instead of walking or taking the subway, I'll just grab an Uber. What's the promise, Zaninjor, around self-driving cars in terms of this whole traffic flow? Because both you and Dave have alluded to that. So go ahead, Zaninjor, you're first.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There are a couple different ways that people are looking at self-driving cars to really improve traffic flow. Some see a future where self-driving cars might sort of work as a taxi service or a bus service where they're shuttling groups of people or as part of ride hailing, as we're seeing now. I think in some ways people see self-driving cars as an option that will help move more people around, maybe as a complement to a bus service or possibly a replacement. And so there is that sort of use case. And I think a lot of people are really looking at that, not necessarily individuals owning self-driving cars, but using like a fleet of self-driving cars to really shuttle groups of people around. And so I think that a lot of officials are focused on that. Of course, there is concern around emissions. So another thing that we've seen here in Massachusetts is a lot of discussion around making sure that whenever there are formal rules and regulations in place, you know, we had a couple bills that focused on making sure that these autonomous vehicles were also electric vehicles. So there is a lot of discussion around, if we do allow these vehicles, how can we make them more efficient, more energy efficient, and better for the environment?
What do you think, Dave, about the, again, promises that were made concerning ride-sharing companies? Those haven't quite worked out in terms of traffic flow. Is that going to be the same thing with self-driving?
Yeah, I suspect so. I've become less optimistic about this over time, watching how human beings behave. There was recently a study that came out, and what they did is they, because they don't really have autonomous cars to give, what they did is they gave a bunch of people basically chauffeured service. So the equivalent of an autonomous car. You didn't have to drive. You could just hop in the car and it would be driven. You'd be, quote, driven somewhere. And they found that the total amount of miles that these people drove went up enormously.
Where was this?
There was several groups of people. One was in San Francisco.
So in big cities.
Big cities, yeah. But so these were people, so this was not like they replaced what they would have done driving themselves with their autonomous car. They added on to their mileage. And I strongly suspect that is what has happened. That would be what would happen unless we do the really unpopular thing, which is to forbid people from driving their own cars. In other words, all this dream of autonomous fleets and all that kind of stuff, removing cars from the road, will only happen if the laws come in to say you can't have your personal vehicles. You have to use these. If you do that, then that will happen. But I can't see that happening.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound very likely.
No.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as we look at some of the emerging public policy issues surrounding self-driving cars. And as we're hearing from one of our guests, this is already happening in Massachusetts, lots of debates there, several companies really promoting self-driving cars, testing these cars in about 15 Massachusetts cities and towns. Join us with your comments, questions, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Now, David, you covered some testing here in New Hampshire in the city of Dover. So what's going on there?
Well, that is sort of related to this. So back when I was a kid and everybody looked at the future vision, you know, the Jetsons vision of what would happen in the future and self-driving cars, the assumption always was that there'd be all these sensors and information in the roads telling the car what to do. We didn't really realize that the technology would improve to the point where cars could be self-contained units that could figure out the world around them, which is, you know, kind of the way that Google and
so we thought the guiding technology would be actually embedded
right,
in the pavement.
Right, it'd be embedded in the roads, and they'd tell, you know,
oh,
you
that's
can
interesting.
Turn left and that kind of stuff. That was the sort of the model you'd heard people talking about. And that's not the model that's being preceded now. But there still is a lot of hope for that, for having information in the infrastructure around the car that can help. And the city of Dover is working with UNH. They have a connectivity lab, and they are developing sensors and communication systems within traffic signals, within traffic lights, that can provide information to the vehicles around them. And this isn't just for autonomous vehicles. So this could tell you drive up, you know, if you're hooked up, you drive up in your car would know that this light has already been red for a minute and it's probably going to turn green very quickly. And so you'd know that. That would be something your car might know. Or it could tell you that there is an accident at this intersection. So don't turn left because you'll get stuck. Or it can tell you that, you know, in 5 minutes it will switch to a blinking yellow and maybe your car could provide that information to you. Obviously, that would be useful for autonomous vehicles as well, that could help them cope with the environment around it. So they're studying what the ways to do it, things like, you know, even, you know, do you do it through cell signals or do you use a dedicated radio network and you know, all those practical details. So that's a very small part of it that would help make autonomous cars work. That's going on right now here.
So it's the tech embedded in the car, but you're also looking at the tech embedded in the broader driving infrastructure.
Right. It's got to be in the infrastructure first, and then the cars have to be adapted to take advantage of the information from the infrastructure. It's called, they call it vehicle to infrastructure. It's as compared to vehicle-to-vehicle communication or vehicle-to-person communication.
Well, we got an email from Tom in Rye who says, thank you, by the way, for today's discussion. Could you please have your panel address the potential insurance coverage of autonomous vehicles? I've been told, Tom says, by a number of insurance executives that coverage is lacking and that many insurers will not insure self-driving vehicles. So, Zeninjor, has Massachusetts even gotten to that part yet? Or are we still dealing with just, you know, cities and towns setting the rules of the road, so to speak?
Yeah, right now it's really municipalities, cities and towns that are setting the rules, as well as the State Department of Transportation. As I mentioned a little bit before, that in Massachusetts, we've had a number of bills. Right now they're in committee. So still at the State House, nothing has passed yet or become law yet. But there are a number of bills that focused on the insurance. I mean, that's a huge question. It's still a discussion in terms of if you get into an accident or you have some sort of traffic incident with a self-driving car, who pays? What does the insurance look like? None of those things have been really worked out yet. A lot of the discussion right now in terms of testing, you know, it's really the companies that are liable as these tests are going on. However, that is still a big question and very much a big issue.
You know what I wonder, Zeninjor, just hearing you talk about the different cities and towns, why hasn't Massachusetts adopted a statewide policy? Why is this being done at the local level?
Yeah, so it's interesting because in Massachusetts, right now, we have all this testing going on, and all of it's really been done by executive order. So in Boston, the mayor issued an executive order to allow testing. At the state level, the governor issued an executive order to allow testing. I think there's been a desire to get these tests going so that the technology can be developed and can be improved. You know, you need to test in order to really develop the technology and improve upon it. But in terms of the legislation, that hasn't happened yet. There are a number of different bills. I think also, too, as David sort of mentioned, there's a lot of different issues here. You have to talk about the infrastructure. You know, it's not just the technology within the vehicles. It's also the infrastructure with the traffic lights, with our roadways. So safety is an issue. Insurance is an issue. Who's liable? There's a lot of different pieces to it in order to really figure out a broad legal and legislative framework for all of these vehicles. And that's something that is still being worked out. But there's just a lot of pieces to it. It's not a simple fix.
Tom, thanks for the email. And you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. You can send us an email as well. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. And both of you, Angie writes in. She says, I and many parents spend hours, capitalized, driving our kids to school and sports and activities. I'd love to have a car show up at school to drive my daughter to dance class. Angie says, so do we say age 10 if alone? Age 6 with a 13-year-old? Now, this is going further on down the line than where we are at right now, for sure, Zeninjor. But we've gotten questions from listeners like this before who say, okay, can I put my 10-year-old in an autonomous vehicle, you know, stay home and make dinner while she goes to dance class? Is anybody talking about this, Zeninjor?
Oh, yeah. So, again, this is part of the discussion around what would a law look like? What would legislation look like to address and to regulate and put some rules on the road for these autonomous vehicles? And this is part of the conversation. And I don't know that we're quite there yet. I mean, that seems pretty far into the future, but it's something that, you know, it's important to discuss right now in terms of, you know, who is able to, you know, what age? Is there an age limit for this technology? That, again, is all part of the discussion. I don't know that I've heard yet, you know, a consensus around that part of the discussion. But again, it's something that is really needs to be sort of investigated and fleshed out a bit more. And in addition to the other issues when we talk about putting in place some sort of statewide legislation on this technology.
Go ahead, David.
The other age group that's really, really excited about autonomous vehicles is the elderly, the extreme,
oh, absolutely.
Extreme elderly. They and the disability community are really, I think, the two people that are most excited about getting it. But certainly, you know, the discussion that many families of my age are having about their parents, about, you know, whether do you need to take away dad's car keys, that would be a much easier discussion if you could then, you know, give dad an autonomous car on every now and then so he could, you know, still get out of the house. But that what we have to. What if a person has Alzheimer's and, you know, is wandering? Can they go in an autonomous car to go to their, you know, to their therapy, or do they have to have an adult? Who knows?
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that, Dave. Yeah.
That's another deep issue.
Well, Angie, thank you so much for raising that point. And you can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org. And let's go to our callers, both of you. Ron is calling in from Manchester. Hi, Ron. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning, Laura. Good morning, guests.
Morning.
So as soon as something like this starts to dip its toe into the mainstream, we hear all the objections about how we can't trust the technology and it's going to be just a horror show of malfunctions. But from the little bit I've read, it doesn't seem like automated vehicles are any more likely, and in fact maybe less likely, to get into accidents than we humans are. Any comments about that?
Well, I'm so glad you called, Ron. And Zeninjor, this is a huge, huge issue. We could talk for the whole hour about this. But transportation officials at the federal level, from what I've read, have pointed out that 90% of accidents are caused by human error. So they're looking at this as a safety feature. But go ahead, Zeninjor.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been, studies looking at this. And, this is something, I mean, here in Massachusetts, there have, you know, with the companies that are testing here, we haven't seen any incidents. We haven't seen any crashes, any safety incidents. As far as we know locally here in Massachusetts, that hasn't been an issue yet. Again, of course, you know, this isn't as if these are widespread tests. They're really happening in particular areas. But that's a huge question. Again, this comes down to a lot of the discussion here comes down to safety. And what's interesting just commenting on the caller's comment there is that, you know, a lot of these companies, when you talk to them, they say, look, we need to be able to do this testing so that we can improve the technology. I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of have to get out there to really be able to make sure that this technology works properly. You have to be able to map different types of communities and really test in the real world so that this technology is safe.
Well, and coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about how the deaths of a woman in Arizona, killed by a self-driving Uber, another death in California, again in a self-driving car, have affected this debate. So I really appreciate the call, Ron. We'll take a lot more of your questions and comments, too, as we look at the rules and regulations emerging for self-driving cars. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Hey there, it's Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A on NHPR. And as a fan of the show, I wanted to let you know that we are coming to New Hampshire and you can be part of the conversation. Join me for an evening of fantastic discussion about issues that matter to you and to the Granite State. Join us on Thursday, October 18th at the Capital Center for the Arts in Concord. You can get your tickets right now at ccanh.com. See you then.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, self-driving cars hit the road as transportation companies continue to roll out autonomous vehicles. Some states are welcoming them with a lot of testing. Others are more cautious. We're looking at the public policy response to this emerging technology and taking your questions, comments, concerns, personal experiences. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-800. 892-6477. With us for the hour is Anindya Enwemeka. She is digital reporter for WBUR. She covers tech and culture as part of BUR's Bostonomics team. With me in studio, David Brooks, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger, podcaster at granitegeek.org. And joining us now on the phone is Stephen Smith. He's a state representative from Sullivan County. He helped author House Bill 314, which would have allowed companies to apply for permits to test fully automated vehicles. That veto, there was a veto from Governor Sununu. That veto was sustained. Stephen Smith, it's really nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, without getting too much into the detail right off the bat, what was the overall goal of your bill, Representative Smith, the big picture you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, the overall goal, a lot of people portrayed 314 as allowing driverless vehicles in New Hampshire, but the truth is that there's nothing in our statutes that prevents them from coming here now. And worse, most of our statutes, like obeying the speed limit or traffic control devices like stop signs and stoplights, refer to a person, so they're not subject to the motor vehicle code. The idea was to create a testing program so that we knew when they were here and to provide a permit that if they were operating unsafely would allow the DMV director to pull that permit, so we had some control in place.
So do you feel your bill was misunderstood?
Yes.
Like how so?
It's kind of the nature of the House. We get 700 to 800 bills per year that we process in about 90 days. Also, with the average age of the legislature, at 54, I'm one of the young puppies. Technology issues are a challenge to portray, and I guess we just didn't get there.
You're saying the relative age of the legislature made it hard for people to understand this emerging technology, so your bill just kind of people just said, whatever, I can't deal with it, and set it aside. It did pass the House and Senate, though, so there was some, you know, feeling for it.
We had good luck in the House. We held on to the bill for the better part of a year so that we could do some education, but this flood of bills that goes from the House then hits the Senate, and there's only 24 of them. That was a big challenge because we had quite a bit of industry opposition because they have the best-case scenario right now. There are literally no rules, no liability requirements, so why would they want the status quo to change?
So that's interesting. So the companies didn't want additional rules. Meanwhile, Governor Sununu said he vetoed the bill partly because he said it could cause safety problems in New Hampshire. It only addressed what are called level 5 cars, fully autonomous, and not cars that are mostly but not completely autonomous. And these are the vehicles, as I'm sure you know, Representative Smith, that were involved in fatal crashes in Arizona and California. So what about the governor's concerns there? You got the concerns of the companies, but what about the governor's safety concerns?
Yeah, a lot of the language in the governor's veto message was directly word for word from the flood of veto requests that we got from industry representatives who refused to help us while we were working on the bill, which was a little concerning. Some of the players are a big one in Washington, D.C., global automakers. Their goal is to prevent any state from passing regulations because they prefer to deal with the federal government. It's more convenient for them, and they want no different rules in the states. They want one national package, which we obviously would resist because we have the right to regulate our own roads. Another lobbying group, the Auto Alliance, told us early that if we didn't come up with a bill that would give them a full deployment package, they weren't going to support it. In other words, the minute they have a product that they think they can go to market with, they want to be able to just put it on the roads. We weren't willing to do that because it's a theoretical product at this point.
So are you saying you don't buy the governor's safety argument?
Oh, of course not, because the truth is that right now they can do whatever they like. They don't have to obey traffic regulations. They're not required to even tell us that they're coming here to test. That's the status quo. The bill would have changed that.
Well, the governor did call on the legislature to draft another bill to, in his words, encourage the development of autonomous vehicle technology. So, Representative Smith, last question, what are your plans on that score, if any?
The immediate plans are, in addition to chairing the House Transportation Committee, I'm also chairing a commission to review and revise the motor vehicle code. I put this in a guide for states last year for the American Bar Association. We have to go through the motor vehicle code and remove references to person and get it vehicle specific so that they do have to conform to the motor vehicle code. That's step one.
So you're going to continue to work on this if you're reelected?
Yes.
Right. Elections every 2 years, yeah. Well, Representative Smith, it's really interesting to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Stephen Smith, a state representative from Sullivan County. And as we heard, he helped author a bill which would have allowed companies to apply for permits to test fully automated vehicles. That was vetoed by Governor Sununu. And Dave Brooks, I got to ask you about this. Concern that companies wanted sort of carte blanche, as Representative Smith called it, full deployment, versus Representative Smith saying he was trying to at least put some regulations on. It's very confusing. Can you just shed some light on this for us?
Well, that sounds to me like this is the model that a lot of tech companies in the real world are taking these days. They call it the Uber model, which is charge in and get on the ground and have your product out there before regulators even notice. And instead of the old day, which was, hey, we want to do something, but the laws may not allow it, so let's change the laws and then we can do it. Now they say, well, we're just going to do it, better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And that sounds very much like what this was. Although, I also understand the desire to have a single federal statute as compared to 50 different statutes you have to handle from state to state. That's always a debate when you have a big company.
Well, and Zininger, I did want to ask you about that, too. You talked earlier about how there isn't a statewide regulatory approach yet in Massachusetts. It's individual cities and towns are talking about testing and working with companies on testing. What are companies saying, Zininger, about their desire for a national standard on this? That's usually what big companies like. It's a lot easier to deal with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so here in Massachusetts, in terms of some of the legislation that's been floating around our state house, when there were hearings, certainly on the automaker side, there was a strong desire to have a national regulation, again, trying to avoid this idea of having a patchwork of different state laws. But in terms of the companies that are currently testing, so some of these tech companies that I mentioned, Newtonomy, Optimus Ride here in Massachusetts, they've been open to regulation, but of course, they're very wary about having too much regulation. So they've certainly been engaging with our local officials here around what rules, what the rules should look like. But there is a lot of concern, especially for these tech companies that are doing these autonomous vehicles, about too much regulation. They want to make sure that they can continue to compete in Massachusetts and grow and also continue to innovate here. And so that is really where the concern is. There is really this tension between what should the federal government's role be versus states and municipalities. Right now, it seems, at least in Massachusetts, the companies that are currently doing testing are open to those discussions.
Again, today in the exchange, we're looking at the public policy response, the rules, regulations, and so forth that communities are putting in place to allow testing of autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. We've been looking at that, hearing about what's been happening in Massachusetts, especially given all the activity there, but also some of the discussions here in the Granite State. And we'd love to hear from you. Your questions and comments and personal experiences are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And both of you, before we go back to our listeners, Dave, did you want to jump in on a point that Zininger was making there?
Yeah, I was curious as to whether the testing that's being done there, I assume these are level 5, fully autonomous cars with, probably a guy sitting in the seat to take over in case things go wrong.
And yeah, I wanted to ask about that too.
Go ahead, Zininger. Absolutely. No, that's a great question. Yes. So right now, the state and here in the city of Boston, these companies that are testing are required to have a safety driver behind the wheel to take over and just in case. So yes, you're not seeing vehicles that are completely empty moving around Boston and some of the other testing areas. There are safety drivers in there, and that is part of an agreement and requirement that the state and here in the city of Boston that they are asking these companies to comply with.
And are they marked? Is it obvious to people on the street that this is a test autonomous vehicle, or do they just look like every other car?
Yeah, so they are marked. All of the test vehicles have the logo of the company. So if you see a a autonomous vehicle from the company Newtonomy, you'll see their logo and you'll see the word Newtonomy on the vehicle. So they're marked. Same with the other company that's doing testing here, Optimus Ride. So you'll clearly see a logo on there. They won't, you know, they won't look like every other car necessarily.
Well, and I was wondering about that. So I'm glad you mentioned it, Dave, this idea of level 5, fully autonomous versus level 4, which is sort of semi-autonomous. And I just wonder, you know, the governor mentioned this in his veto message, Zeninjor, are concerned that these fully autonomous vehicles and the level 4 somewhat autonomous vehicles might not be safe, especially since the level 4 vehicles are the ones that were involved in crashes.
Yeah. So here, again, in Massachusetts, there haven't had any safety incidents here. So I think, you know, these companies are really trying to work with municipalities and work with the state to come to an agreement in terms of the terms of what the test will look like. So whether it's isolated in a particular area. So, for example, in the city of Boston, a lot of the testing first started in an industrial park in South Boston. And then, you know, the city and these companies, as they sort of reached certain benchmarks, you know, after a period of time, came back to the table and said, OK, we'll allow you to go on these roadways. And so these companies have really been working with the local governments here to come up with parameters for testing and do those tests and then sort of build out their testing area incrementally. And so that's how it's been working here. And so far, there haven't been any crashes or incidents.
Well, Allegra writes us on Facebook. She says, Volvo has already put some self-driving features in their vehicles for a few years now. For example, the vehicle I have, Allegra says, which is from 2015, believe it or not, has many ahead of its time features. Allegra says there's adaptive cruise control, which is hugely helpful when in traffic. The car looks ahead at the cars in front of you, adjusts the cruise control up and down so you don't have to, keeps a safe distance from them at the same time. She says the car can also parallel park itself if you want it to. Wow, that would help me. I'm terrible at parallel parking. At any and all times, you are still in control of the vehicle, she says, and there is no time when you can't stop these things from working as you turn them on and off. I'm so glad you wrote, Allegra, because, Dave, a lot of people have said, look, our cars are sort of somewhat self-driving anyway.
Absolutely.
We're already kind of moving in this direction, so go ahead.
Absolutely, and Audi is probably ahead of the pack at the moment. The A8, there is the first one on the road that claims to be level 3, which is not level 4. It was reported as level 4 initially, which freaked people out.
Level 4
is the car can do everything, and you can take over if necessary. Level 3 is the car can do almost everything, and you take over as necessary.
They're, and level 5 is you can sleep in the back.
Level 5 is you sleep in the back.
Okay.
So let's go back. So level 1 is, you know, driver assist is cruise control. You know, and level 2 is what
Allegra
was talking about exactly, is that it's smart cruise control. It'll slow down if you're about to run into the car in front of you. And, you know, older people like me still were kind of weirded out by that, but that's become kind of routine. The next level up is it's doing a better job of monitoring the environment around it, and it can be starting making decisions about driving, not just slowing down and speeding up in a straight line or staying between the lines. And that is where things start to get iffy. That's where, as you say, there have been some problems because the driver stops paying attention, and then all of a sudden the level 3 gets into a situation it can't handle, and the driver is, you know, in the middle of playing Minecraft, and things go bad.
Well, and I think it was a level 4 car that was involved in the crash in California. Allegra, thank you so much for the Facebook comment. You can comment on Facebook too. It's NHPR Exchange, or Twitter, NHPR Exchange, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. And you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Another email came in. Someone didn't want their name used. This person says, one concept I don't frequently hear mentioned when discussing driverless cars, other than briefly just now on the program, but in a negative light, is that as an aging baby boomer, the greatest asset to these cars is for me to own one so that when I shouldn't drive, I can maintain my independence and not have to rely on a service to come for me. I know other seniors that think the same. And Dave Brooks, you had mentioned that before, but I don't think in a negative light. I mean, my parents both just gave up driving, so that's not a negative thing. It's just life.
No, it's in negative light only in the sense is that it might end up increasing the number of miles that are driven and increasing congestion if it's not integrated into the current system properly. No, I think that's absolutely one of the great benefits of autonomous vehicles is providing mobility to people who have lost it. And as I mentioned earlier, all the hearings we've had in New Hampshire, the disability community has been strongly in favor of, you know, do anything you can to get autonomous vehicles on the road as soon as possible. Because, you know, if you're a person who can no longer, you're wheelchair bound and have other issues, you can't get out to your own car and climb in your own car and drive away, if you could call an autonomous vehicle and climb into it, that would... What a difference it makes to their life. So that's a very strong argument in favor of it.
Well,
and that conversation has been happening here in Massachusetts as well. I mean, that is what people see as a huge benefit of autonomous vehicles is that people who have a harder time, who maybe have mobility issues, people with disabilities, will have this great option that will allow them to continue to be independent and get around in a much more efficient and better way than maybe some of the other transportation options that we have here. So that's certainly part of the conversation here in Massachusetts as well.
Yeah, although as an insurer, as both you and Dave said earlier, definitely allow people to get around. Maybe not so efficient, though, if everybody is doing this, right? And there's a
Absolutely.
Zillion cars on the road. So that's the unanswered question. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, that's the other side of it. Yeah.
And just going back quickly to safety, we're talking about issues with safety, of course, but I think safety is one of the strongest arguments also in favor of autonomous vehicles. If you could magically turn all the cars on the road into autonomous vehicles today, it would save 30,000 lives a year and 100,000 injuries. I mean, people
wow,
are terrible.
Well, really?
Don't hold me to those numbers.
Okay.
But, I mean, people are horrible drivers, right? People are awful drivers, and even a poor AI and a questionable technology is going to be safer than a whole bunch of people on the road. So, But the trouble is the transition, and the transition is potentially where the problems come in.
The transition, meaning, Dave, you know, how you transition from some cars are autonomous, some are semi-autonomous, some are fully being driven by people, making all the mistakes that people make,
right.
And so forth.
Exactly.
That's the problem. What do you think about that, Zinnendjor? You know, the idea that you can't just flip a switch, even though it might be a lot easier to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Dave is absolutely correct. I mean, that is really where the tension is this there's going to have to be some sort of transition period, right, where people are going to have their own vehicles that they want to drive and there'll be autonomous vehicles on the road. And that's really where a lot of this tension and a lot of the concern is coming from is that period. Because when you think about it further out in the future, if every single vehicle on the road is an autonomous vehicle, then you would expect them to behave in a very similar manner. So we're not going to see some of the same traffic incidents and crashes and human error that we might expect to see when there are human drivers on the road. But it really is that transition period where you have both types of drivers on the road trying to navigate around each other. And so that is really where a lot of the focus is right now in terms of figuring out how to make that transition.
More on emerging public policy towards self-driving cars in just a moment. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how states and cities are responding to self-driving cars. Companies are ready to test, but some communities, as we're hearing, are more eager to welcome them than others. We're just looking at the public policy response to this, what regulations, requirements, cities and towns are putting in place as this industry expands. Let's hear your questions and your suggestions. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Dave and Zinnendjor, you know, we've talked about how the companies have weighed in on this, what they would like to see. Zinnendjor, you've told us a lot about the cities and towns in Massachusetts, especially Boston. But Zinnendjor, what about just general public sentiment? How does the general public feel about the arrival of these cars?
Yeah, it's interesting. The public is kind of lukewarm about autonomous vehicles.
I mean, really?
Look, it's interesting. And so there's been a couple studies and polls here. But it's interesting because, you know, being in Massachusetts, we have, again, a huge tech hub. So certainly on that side of it, there's a lot of excitement and interest and intrigue about this type of technology and what it will do. But it's interesting. Last year, MIT did a study that found that, you know, consumers aren't as maybe enthusiastic as we might think about self-driving cars. So that was a study of 3,000 people, and about half said that they would never buy a self-driving car. The rest sort of indicated that they may be interested in purchasing one at varying price points. But, you know, people said that they just don't trust the technology. They don't feel that the vehicles are safe. Part of it is also a control thing, that people aren't quite ready yet to kind of give up control of their vehicles. But what was really interesting about that study is that it found that people like autonomous features. So things like automatic emergency braking, lane keeping systems, auto park features, which kind of gets to the comment we heard earlier from Allegra about autonomous features. So people like those autonomous features. But, you know, there have also been other studies that have shown that people aren't quite ready to trust this technology. And, you know, there was another poll that was done earlier this year in Massachusetts by the Mass Inc. polling group that found that more people than not think autonomous vehicles will make roads less safe and will make traffic worse. And
less so, safe, huh?
Yes, yes. That more people than not think it will make the roads less safe. So what's interesting is when, you know, when I talk to the companies that are testing here in Massachusetts, you know, a lot of what they mention is that they realize that, you know, in some ways they maybe need to do sort of like a public awareness campaign and maybe, you know, introduce the public a little bit more to this technology so people can become more familiar and more comfortable with it. You know, one of the companies that have been testing here in the city of Boston has done some trials where they've taken groups of people in these autonomous vehicles. So that's definitely something that these companies are aware of and understanding that there is still a little bit of discomfort, quite a bit of discomfort among the public. And so they're looking at ways of how they can make people more comfortable with this technology.
Well, it's interesting that you said that survey was sponsored by MIT. MIT is, from what I understand, Zeninjor is also a partner in one of these self-driving ventures in Massachusetts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the company that's been doing a lot of the testing here in the city of Boston, Newtonomy, was founded, you know, it was a spinoff of MIT. And, you know, MIT obviously has its hands in a lot of different autonomous ventures and technology companies here in the state. And so it's interesting that they are really trying to study this and track sentiment among the public as this technology develops. What's also interesting is that study came from MIT's Age Lab. So I know we talked a bit about aging earlier and how that comes into play when we talk about autonomous vehicles. And so they're really looking at how what the sentiment is among different demographics of people. And again, there is this idea that this, you know, this technology holds a lot of promise for older folks, for you know, different people who need other mobility options and want to be able to remain independent as they get older.
Dave, I'm really struck by this study that Zeninjor is telling us about, that half of the people MIT surveyed, and they surveyed about 3,000 people, said, no, I would not do this. As she said, people aren't willing to give up control, even though, as you pointed out earlier, you know, there's a lot of car crashes out there and people are distracted and a lot of people just are terrible drivers.
A lot of people the control thing is a big deal. I mean, driving a car is a lot of fun when it is fun. I mean, I don't want to give up my manual transmission because that's part of my control, which is, you know, a terrible technology in many ways. So I think part of the reason that a lot of people are dubious about it is they're dubious about computers and online stuff. They've seen all the problems that have come up since, you know, the internet came along and was going to make our lives wonderful, and suddenly it's doing all sorts of horrible things.
And hacking, I think identity theft.
So cybersecurity is, I think, frankly, a potential Achilles heel to autonomous vehicles because they have to be so connected with the world around them that there's a lot of places where things can go wrong. And we have seen in every connected technology, nobody is able to keep out organized bad guys. Forget it. I mean, they can ruin anything if they want to. And, you know, if you can get in and start suddenly, you know, turn off all of Tesla's, you know, autopilot at once, which actually Tesla did on the 3 because there was some software issue. They suddenly turned off the autopilot for a minute on everybody for a little while. I mean, if bad guys can get in and do that when people are driving to work, you know, that could be a real problem. Maybe that's exaggerated, but every bad scenario that has been imagined pretty much has come about in the last 5 years. So I think that's actually a bigger problem than a lot of autonomous vehicle people realize.
Wow. I'd love to hear your thoughts, too, Zeninger, what you're hearing policymakers in Massachusetts say about this. Dave's right. That could be a huge, huge concern for folks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is one of the key issues that lawmakers have been discussing and grappling with. There is a lot of concern from certain groups in terms of privacy. You know, these vehicles have sensors and computers and other technology that is gathering data about their surroundings. So are they gathering data about passengers? Are they gathering data about, you know, folks, who, you know, pedestrians who are on the side of the road, who are walking near these vehicles? There is a lot of concern about what type of data these vehicles may be gathering, and who owns that data? Where does it go? How is it stored? How long is it stored? Is that something that people would have access to if their personal information is somehow being compromised or used to, you know, help these vehicles understand their environments, right? Because these vehicles need to understand their environments in order to function properly. And so does that also mean the people in these environments? So that's a huge, huge issue, and definitely a major topic of discussion here when it comes to legislation and what formal regulation would look like. That's definitely part of the conversation.
Wow. So what do the companies, Zeninger, say about that?
So the companies right now, again, you know, a lot of what underpins what they're doing is, you know, they need the data. They need to gather as much information about various environments and communities and conditions so that this technology can function properly. I think they're certainly sensitive to personal information. But it's interesting because in some ways there may be some opportunities where that personal information might be valuable. So for example, if someone has a certain type of health condition or ailment or something, if the vehicle sort of understands that and is able to help that person or interact with that person in a way that helps them use this technology. But again, there's a lot of concern, you know, especially when we talk about health information and what's available. Dave makes a great point that we've seen all sorts of hacks happening with the technology that already exists. We've seen, you know, various threats to cybersecurity that has already happened. And so the concern there is now we want to encourage this new technology when, you know, we haven't really secured our other devices and, you know, and made them not prone to the types of hacks and cybersecurity threats that we've been seeing. So, you know, the companies, they certainly want data, mostly the environment, the road conditions, that sort of thing. But there is some sensitivity around what that might mean for human passengers and you know, bystanders and pedestrians who are just on the street.
Well, and we're in an era where we do see a lack of trust among the general public toward sort of big tech companies like Facebook and so forth. So, boy, that's a hurdle that these companies are going to have to look at. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. And both of you, let's take another call. This is John in New Durham. Hi, John. Thanks for being with us. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I joined your conversation late. I'm sorry, but I did hear where you would, the participant said suggested there was a survey that people in the public aren't accepting autonomous vehicles.
Yeah,
I'm a techie, working software. Would love to see autonomous vehicles, but I think the system's wrong. I think they're trying to put vehicles into a system designed for people. I would love to see a car that can do 100, 200 miles an hour in a system designed for an autonomous vehicle, not my car stuck into a car or stuck into a lane with a bunch of other people who are in control or other cars are in control, none of them talking to each other.
Go ahead, Dave Brooks.
Well, that's a good point because there are many people argue that autonomous vehicles are solving the wrong problem. they are taking our existing flawed system and trying to replace people with artificial intelligence instead of altering the system.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, so you have an autonomous vehicle. It still takes up, you know, the 150 square feet or whatever for a single person, and it will always be a single person, probably, even more so than now. And so you're going to have all the congestion and parking and probably pollution issues that we currently have. I mean, the way that cities are tied up with cars, it doesn't really matter if they're tied up with cars being driven by a person or tied up with cars being driven by themselves. Instead of trying to develop systems where people can move around, you know, you get put people in a bus, you can get 100 people in a footprint that would take 10 times as much for cars, whether they're autonomous or not. And in terms of the 100 miles an hour for specialty systems, I actually think that sort of thing is going to come with trucking. So I think long-distance trucking is probably the place where a business case can be made for a fully autonomous vehicle quickly. Because you got a truck, you've loaded it up, you know, in Boston, or better yet, out in the Midwest. You've loaded it up in Kansas City and needs to go to St. Louis. It just drives out on the interstate all the way. You can just send it autonomous. At the other end, it parks itself and gets unloaded. That is where I think you will see a truly autonomous vehicle.
Well, mind the job implications of that, not just the truck driver, but all the people at the truck stops who, you know, serve drivers and so forth. I mean, those places are
little
hubs.
Who's going to serve that really lousy coffee at the truck stop if it's an autonomous vehicle?
Well, we got, John, thank you for the call. Got an email from Michael in Dover who says, I'd like to suggest that the criteria for success on the self-driving car should be, is it an improvement over the performance of distracted humans? Critics keep pointing out that the technology isn't perfect, but the epidemic of distracted drivers is a call to action. We need to get the distracted humans out of the driver's seat. Michael, thank you so much. And both of you, we did a whole program about a month ago on just what he calls the epidemic of distracted drivers. Fatalities are up on New Hampshire's roadways, but it sounds like there's a lot that has to be worked through, tested, thought about, debated before we start seeing these on the road. We'll talk about this again, I hope, guys. Dave Brooks, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's always fun.
Dave Brooks, reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger, podcaster at graniteGeek.org, and Zeninjor Enwemeka, it was really great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, happy to do it. Thanks.
Zeninjor Enwemeka, she's digital reporter for WBUR, covering tech and culture as part of BUR's Bostonomics team. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.